It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And joining me in studio, the man who gives us a little of this and a little of that, the Film Yap's Joe Shearer. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
That's not your energy. I know, I've known you long enough. That's not your energy. So, and this is the busy time of year for us us film critics, the IFJA. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, the IFJA has their big meeting on Saturday.
Yes.
Ooh. Where bloodshed will be not spilled, really. Yeah. There'll be just
a few scrapes, maybe.
Some feathers ruffled.
Right. Slap fights, definitely.
I hate your list. I hate you. I hate your chit. Chit, C-H-I-T.
Yes, that's his name. It is chit.
So, it's been the month of December for film critics is what we call first world problems, because
yes,
we have been overloaded with award screeners for your consideration, so we can have this big meeting. So yes, mm-hmm, we get to see some films before you do. Mm-hmm. That's just part of life.
Yeah. I will say this year, even more than most, I believe Nick Rogers, one of our colleagues, has been keeping a list, and we have over 100 this year.
Of screeners?
Yes, between digital and actual physical copies.
Yeah, so it's good. And this happens every year. I've talked before about the film critics calendar. Because it's similar as far as January to December, like you folks, but there are little ebbs and flows, and I know some people, actually, we're both parents, we also live by the academic clock.
Yes.
So there's beginning of class, end of class, but we talk about November and especially December being grown-up movie season. That's mm-hmm, when the award contenders come out, the big grown-up, you know, the summer movies are for the kids, and these are for the mature folks, yeah. And I usually start doing my first draft of the best and worst of the year in November, just to see where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I looked at the list and went, it's a little thin.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, December has a way of saying, well, we're going to fatten it up for you.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then you look at your list and you're like, wow, that didn't even make the top 10.
Yes.
These are the problems we have, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
You know, so, you're welcome.
Yes, but, yes. I remember way back in January when Get Out was going to be my top movie. And it's not in the top 10.
It still is? Okay.
But I think it's just outside now.
Did it have the, like, I know there was somebody in our group that had Hell or High Water as the best film of the year, and like in August, and that film came out in August, and then every week the question was, is this better than Hell or High Water? No. And sure enough, it lasted.
I think maybe you mean Wind River. Do you mean Wind River? Hell or High Water was our pet movie from last year for some of us.
Wind River. I liked Wind River.
Yeah.
And by the way, the mansplaining is intentional with the Elizabeth Olsen character. That's
okay.
Just kind of. I think some folks didn't quite get that.
Right.
But you're not here to talk about Wind River.
Nope.
We're here to talk about, I guess, the biggest movie happening this week.
Yes. the biggest movie of the year is
the Star Wars Last Jedi, or as I, of course, wrote sarcastically on social media, I to hell with your spoiler alerts, the Last Jedi are made out of people. So there. Okay, so this is episode 8.
Yes, it is.
And we picked up where we left off. I have the same feeling, and I'm slightly more curmudgeon-y than you. Not as much as Richard, but getting ready for the Star Wars films, I have the same attitude I think I do with the Avenger films. Was before, just as I'm ready to enter the theater, I'm like, God, another one of these? Do I have to go back? And I almost wish the studio would go, you know, previously on Star Wars and give us, like, you know, 2 minutes of what the last film highlights were to get back into it. But once I get into the film, and so it's Rian Johnson who gave us Looper and The Lookout.
Mm-hmm. Brick, I believe.
Or Brick, that's right. He gave us Brick, everyone's favorite high school noir.
Yeah.
And so you have three stories going on. And there have, you know, we're not the first ones to say there's a lot of parallels to The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
You have sneaky stuff, and you have facing the big villain stuff, and then you have training stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not a spoiler. That's
right.
And honestly, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but if you are a longtime Star Wars person, I think, with the exception of maybe the death of Carrie Fisher last year, there really isn't any huge surprises, especially in lieu of the last picture and what has happened with, well, what happens with the old regime.
Yeah, yeah. To me, the absolute best thing about this movie is that there have been a couple of questions that have kind of been ongoing. They're mostly detail-oriented questions about some of the characters, and I don't even want to articulate those questions here.
We're going to be very specifically gray and vague.
Yes, yeah. I don't want to even articulate the questions because they answer those questions. If you're a fan, of a high enough caliber, so to speak, speaking of your personal love of fandom, not of, you know, your intelligence at all.
Right.
But, if you're that hardcore of a fan, you know these questions. You've been asking these questions. The answers they give, to me, were completely satisfying in a kind of a meta way.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, because I'll even use the word trolling. I use the word trolling in my review that Rian Johnson or, you know, whomever, the respective writers trolled everyone in the most glorious way I can imagine.
So it's like when you scratch your nose or your forehead with your middle finger to make a point.
Yes.
It's a little of that,
yeah,
in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you hold up three fingers and you have to read between.
Right.
Yes, Mark Hamill's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Carrie Fisher's in it. No, Billy Dee Williams is not in it.
Right.
We will. That's the one spoiler. We'll hold out for the next film.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's available. But no, it was so, and I've said this before about the rebooting of it. I mean, I was 7 when I saw the original Star Wars in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to top that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be 48 next week, and it's hard, and I've seen, think about the slew of post Star Wars, space swashbuckling things we've seen. It's hard to recreate that. Mm-hmm. It was cool seeing, oh God, it might have been the first. Yeah. But it was cool seeing guys our age with kids of that my Star Wars age and them getting overwhelmed and blown away by it.
Yes.
I can't do that. It was cool as a dad, but it's not the same as being as a kid.
Right.
That being said, It is satisfying to watch. It delivers, and there's been a number of franchises, Star Trek, James Bond, where we get something old and something new. Obviously, the presence of Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher are part of the old, and then the new kids are fun. Not the new kids, lowercase.
Right.
But, John Boyega and Daisy Ridley and Oscar Isaac, he's not really new, but he's still cool. And they're fine. Laura Dern shows up in this, and she does a good job. And I think David Edelstein says Laura Dern should be in every film. And I'm like, at the very least, she would smack Bryce Dallas Howard about her footwear in Jurassic World.
Yes.
But the favorite moments for me involved the scenes with the old. And I think obviously because the death of Carrie Fisher looms over this, and it's got a really nice reunion, warming of the heart stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know the technology is going to be better. You know there's going to be the action stuff. There's going to be the fighting stuff. It's mm-hmm. it's all there for you.
Yes.
So
for me, just about everything worked. I had some minor issues with the pacing. There is one particular moment where something very cool happens, and it's kind of a key pivotal point of the movie, and then we cut away from that to something else for about 30 seconds, and then back to that, and it kind of I'm sitting there going, this is awesome, and then
whoa,
and then there was a stop, and there was kind of a corny joke. And then it's also kind of a serious moment too. Mm-hmm. And then it goes right back to that moment. And I thought, why did they do that? Let's linger back on that for, you know. And again, so there's that. And then the first hour drags just a little bit.
Well, they just kind of, actually, ladies and gentlemen, can you hold for just a moment, please? Hold on. Hi, folks. We're back. I just had to verify that I knew what Joe was talking about, and I did. Uh-huh. So, welcome to Film Sociology.
and a spoiler alert, please hold, is a moment in Star Wars.
That's right. Yeah, early on. Yeah, as Joe was saying, the first hour, but I guess when you have, I thought it the same way with Rogue One, where mm-hmm. you have to introduce a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then, okay, now we got the ball rolling, and now we can, there is that. I'm going back to being specifically gray and vague. Mm-hmm. The only real quibble I had, the only time I got pulled out of watching it was the very, very, very last scene. Mm-hmm. And when you see this, you'll say, oh, Matt's a cynic. And because it's trying to tell you one thing, and I understand what it's trying to tell you. Mm-hmm. The other, but what it told me, and of course, this is great stuff in lieu of what Disney buying Fox. That they're going to make more of these.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. And so, you know, of course, you know this. You know, you said that just before we started recording here, and I said, well, yeah, of course they're going to make more of these.
It was just kind of a reminder, a different middle finger from Ryan.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, overall, really enjoyed it, mm-hmm. More than I thought I would. I think I enjoyed it better than the last one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we'll see what happens this one. And, of course, I hope more happens in the next Rogue picture because you introduce all the United characters of Benetton, and hopefully they'll have more to do. So.
Yeah.
I saw this because of work and life commitments. I saw this in IMAX mm-hmm. in 3D. Don't need to see it in 3D. You
no.
really don't.
I actually avoided the 3D and went to a standard.
The only
2D
reason why I went to the 3D one because it was the earliest.
Yeah, right.
So I went at 9:30 on a Friday morning with the old, the unemployed, and the weird, mm-hmm. and I did not have the same crowd as I know you did, yes. And I know Matt Pelzer here at WFYI did. Mm-hmm. How was your crowd was really into it?
It was very lively. It was. I went to the Glendale Theater.
Ooh.
In part, well, okay. I'll admit, in full, because I have one of our courtesy passes where I can get two free tickets, which they then promptly did not let me use.
Yeah, I saw that didn't surprise me. Yeah. I was like, yeah.
I decided to give it a shot, you know, and
see
so
if they,
I was.
See
I was
if they taking, didn't notice.
Right, and I was taking, I took my three kids. It was me and my three kids. So,
now, how were they?
Now, surprising, it was an odd dynamic. None of them really wanted to go last night, and because of other circumstances I went through that I can't really discuss right now, I was bound and determined that I was going to go see it last night, and I was like, listen, we're going to go see it, and everybody's going to love it, and it's going to be great.
Wow. And kids are very capable of saying, no, we won't.
Yes, they very much are.
Arms crossed.
To their credit, my youngest fell asleep. My daughter, who's in the middle, absolutely loved it, although she was asking me. She did ask me a couple of times when it was going to be over. And it's a long movie. It's what?
It's two and a half.
It's the
longest of the Star Wars films.
Yeah, and then my oldest enjoyed it, but I don't get the feeling he's blown away by it.
How old is he now?
He's 12.
He's starting to get cynical.
Yeah, he is, and he's getting there. Now, he's still into the superheroes and that kind of stuff, but Star Wars for them It's not the same.
No, it's not the same as us.
Yeah. Now, Jenna did this morning, as I was putting on the bus, ask if we could see it again, and she wants to take her friend. So
is she digging Daisy Ridley?
She is, I think.
Yay! Yeah, cool.
And I think what it is, for them at least, is that they kind of forgot about The Force Awakens. Now, they loved The Force Awakens when it came out.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we went and saw it, and they were blown away. And I think they just kind of forgot about it. They were not into Rogue One so much, and I've actually tried to get them watching it a couple times, and to no avail.
Right.
And but yeah, this one I think they forgot a little bit.
Okay.
And I think by the time they kind of waded through, like I said, some of the slower points at the beginning and got to the meat, I think they were really into it.
There's a really cool moment. Well, there's lots of cool vision, but the one in particular that involves salt.
Yes.
And it's a nice piece of symbolism in lieu of what's going to happen at a particular battle sequence.
Yes,
I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool.
My version of what your kids are going through was last year, we went to my parents' home, my father and stepmother, for Thanksgiving. They live outside Las Vegas.
Okay.
So I went to Vegas as a kid in the 70s and early 80s. That explains a lot.
Yeah.
And Vegas then is different than Disneyland West is current.
Yeah.
And I had not been to Vegas in 30 years. And it just has this odd, fond memory of this child being in this giant grown-up city. And Emma did not have the same first impression responses I did, because she had been to New York, she'd been to Orlando, she'd been to Disneyland and Universal, and I mean, and Vegas is kind of it's an amusement park. It's an amusement park with lots of booze and gambling and hookers.
Right.
And so she didn't have the same overwhelming. I mean, it's like seeing Star Wars for the first time. It's just a different experience. And as you know, I think as you've learned, you know, there's stuff you want them to see, and they'll easily repel you with deflector shields.
Oh, yes.
And so you just hope that randomly they will pick up something or go, hey, Dad, can we watch this?
Yes.
And then you try not to melt.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah. Yeah. And I had that moment with Jenna, with my daughter, this morning when she said, can we go again and take Katie, her friend, who loves Star Wars, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She says, so I was like, you know, I'm sure that we can do that.
Now, does she get jacked up more for this or for Wonder Woman? Did you take her to Wonder Woman?
I took her to Wonder Woman. Uh-huh. She loved it, but she did not want to see Justice League. I didn't take her to see Justice
not
League.
Enough, not enough Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there was a lot of Wonder Woman. Yeah, but she had almost no interest in seeing Justice League at all. So
here's another building a bridge between Wonder Woman and Star Wars: Last Jedi, and being wonderfully vague.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain actors that if you cast them, it's not going to be that big a shock if their character turns on you.
Yeah.
So I think in Wonder Woman, you know who I'm talking about. And I think you who and the actor who I'm talking about in Last Jedi, who I didn't know was going to be in this, but as soon as I saw him, it's like a heel turning face.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're going to turn. So I mean, I love you, but you're
well,
going to turn.
Well, you could call it the Lando moment, even going
back
to.
Yeah, well, there is that comparison.
There is
going to be that, and this person will be in the next one for sure. I just hadn't seen that big of a. By the way, we like wrestling.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen that big of a that big of a heel turn since The Fate of the Furious, which was basically one giant heel turn.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, he's gonna come back by the time the movie's over.
Right.
So anyway, go see Star Wars. Big screen is good. Don't need to see it in 3D. And yeah, I'm still trying to get my daughter to watch the first Star Wars.
I wouldn't, as we do a couple of times, we're very much encouraged to do this, and I would completely agree. I would suggest patronizing the Indiana State Museum IMAX.
Yes. Hi, Craig.
Yeah, hi, Craig.
The bigger the screen,
yes.
The better. Yeah, just let it overwhelm you.
And they have it in 70mm film,
ooh.
which if you even say, if you, as I believe Craig does this to people just passing them on the street, that this is the only theater in the entire Midwest, not in Indiana, not in the city, the entire Midwest that shows it in 70mm film as opposed to digital, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I wish he'd gotten Hateful Eight, but then people gripe about Hateful Eight being a 70 millimeter. Anyway, yeah. So no, hi, Craig. How you doing? All right, so shifting gears a little bit back to wrestling, because mm-hmm. Joe Scheer, wrestling correspondent.
It's got to happen.
Yeah. You, I did not see Ferdinand, although I did hear the soundtrack to Ferdinand. Thank you to the screener people for sending that. Uh-huh. But from the people who gave us Ice Age, we now have the story of Ferdinand, a sensitive bull, or a sensible, a bull who does not want to fight, and he's voiced by, of all people, John Cena. So his little hoof says, you can't see me.
Right, exactly right.
So, your thoughts on Ferdinand?
It was fine. To me, that's the best I can say about it. A couple of our friends have raved about it, and I didn't see that so much. I thought there was nothing wrong with it. It was, your typical movie. I mean, everyone kind of knows the story of Ferdinand.
I'm going to get, as we said, loosely based on the book of the book.
Yeah,
of Ferdinand.
Yeah.
So the bull doesn't want to fight. Uh-huh. He doesn't want to snort. Of course, there are animal friends.
Yes.
With various voices. Hi, uh-huh. Kate McKinnon. Uh-huh. And I bet there's an escape. There's an imprisonment, and
right.
there's an escape.
Yes.
And then there's pop music.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
does Ferdinand do any winks and nods to his old day job?
There is no, not
good.
Really. Yeah, that's pretty good, actually. I think it would be out of place with John Cena
in
this case.
There's no hoof going.
There is no you can't see me moment. To me, the oddest thing, the most random casting in this film, is an Indianapolis icon. Peyton Manning is one of the voices in this film, and he's pretty prominent. His character's pretty prominent, and I had no idea going in. I was sitting there watching, and this bull speaks, and I go, is that Peyton Manning?
It's because the character says Omaha.
Right. He does. He says Omaha over and over. No. He's he's one of the, there's the gist of the film is that bulls are meant to be, brutal beasts, and their dream is to, it, much like if you want to compare it to something like Sausage Party, there's thematic similarities.
Oh, I can't wait.
Only thematic similarities.
Okay.
Where the goal of your average typical bull is to go to the bullfighting ring and face the matador.
And die, yeah.
Totally not knowing that you're going to your death. If you do not become a bullfighting bull, you are sold off to the slaughterhouse. So pretty much you're screwed
start. There's no other comparisons. There's no, there's no body parts flying
right,
around.
Right, yes. Yeah, so from their point of view, they have no idea that they're going
right.
to die in the bullfighting ring. So that's their vision of heaven, or, you've made it when you're there. There's that. Plus, there's the macho toughness that, you have to embody as a bull. Ferdinand, of course, is much more sensitive. He's much more interested in being friends with people. And he actually escapes as a calf and finds a young girl who kind of becomes his best buddy. And then, of course, he's separated from her and found his way back into the seedy underworld of the matador, the bullfighting rings. And
is there a running of the bulls?
There is a scene there. Now, there is a scene of Ferdinand in a china shop.
Well, you see that in the posters. I mean, I got that. Yeah.
And it's actually a pretty good scene.
Okay.
It's actually pretty funny. And there is there is a sequence where they're running through. There's several bulls running through
a town. Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of tearing the place up. But it's fine. It's one of the movies that my kids will really enjoy. My older two, maybe now to a lesser degree.
Cynicism sitting setting in.
They still really liked it.
Okay.
For me, I was okay with it. It didn't blow me away.
Sure.
Yeah. And oddly for me this year, none of the animated films have really blown me away,
with exception of Coco.
Not even Coco.
Really?
For me. Yeah.
No.
So here's my chance to rant about Coco.
Uh oh.
There is a movie that came out a couple years ago called The Book of Life.
Not enough people got to see.
Yeah, and it's very similar to Coco,
and didn't have a 20-minute Frozen opener.
Yes, yes. I'm at the point with Pixar where they've done that several times. If you go to you go to Toy Story, you go to Cars, you go to Monsters Incorporated, all of those are the framework of their story, if not more, is something that has been done very explicitly in another.
So what you're saying is Pixar is ripping off Ringo Lamb.
They're ripping off a lot. Yes, they're ripping off
and
a
Michael
lot of different
Mann.
Places.
That's where you're going, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Mike White just likes you even more now.
Well, right. So Cars is essentially the film Doc Hollywood. Michael J. Fox.
And of course, how many people remember Doc Hollywood and how many people have seen Cars?
Not that many. Yes, exactly right.
I griped about the first Cars. Remember when the first Cars was the weakest of the Pixar films?
Yes.
Remember that? Remember those days?
I do remember those days.
Like, remember when we used to make fun of Quail for being dumb?
Right.
Anyway.
Right. It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I enjoyed Coco. It was a good movie. But the similarities to The Book of Life, which I did see.
Well, look at you standing up for a smaller film. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I understand that. So, yeah. And now I have to revisit it because you brought this up. All right.
Yeah.
I have told Emma, I was thinking about the Oscars. I'm like, okay, Coco. Mm-hmm. Maybe Lego Batman movie, and then three foreign animated films we've never heard of and we will probably like.
Right.
So anyway, that's that one category wrapped up.
Yeah.
Okay. Also in theaters, and there's some, so he saw something that I didn't. And I'm going to talk about something that I saw and he didn't, and then we'll get back into another film that I know that's high up on our list to talk about. But Woody Allen's new film, Wonder Wheel, with this is Kate Winslet. And Jim Belushi, who's actually pretty decent, Juno Temple, and Justin Timberlake. So Woody's been on a pretty good streak lately. His Midnight in Paris and the other things. I like Cafe Society. And, he's been doing a lot of kind of period pieces set in different, he's been expanding the globe a little more.
Yeah.
He comes back to New York with Wonder Wheel. This is one of his darker ones. This is like Cassandra's Dream and Match Point and Crimes and not as dark as Crimes and Misdemeanors, but it's all in the cotton candy colored world of Coney Island in the 1950s.
Okay,
in it, Winslet and Belushi are a couple. Both work on the boardwalk. She works at a clam bar. He does amusement rides, that sort of thing. This is all narrated. There's a bit of a narration by Justin Timberlake, playing the Woody Allen S character. He's a lifeguard, but he's studying, if I remember right, foreign theater. He's doing a theater degree at NYU, but he's also a hunky lifeguard from the 50s, like Justin Timberlake. And they have kids from previous marriages. Kate Winslet's kid likes to set fire to things.
Huh?
Jim Belushi's much older daughter, played by Juno Temple, shows up at the house. She is married to a low-level mobster and she's on the run, basically. So there's that. There is references to Eugene O'Neill and Tennessee Williams, which I think Alan covered Tennessee Williams slightly better in Blue Jasmine, the Kate Winslet or Kate Blanchett film with Sally Hawkins. Yeah. We'll get to Sally Hawkins in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
And, So there's that subject matter as far as trust and betrayal and maybe sacrifice, stuff that's been covered in other Woody Allen films. Here's where it gets a little dicey, especially in lieu of, Woody's been kind of put on the back burner in lieu of current events.
Yeah.
Current news events. You might say he might have created the path for this. You kind of knew where I'm going. In this film, Justin Timberlake's character, the lifeguard, who is our narrator, he also has a way of saying, he also says that because he's a playwright, he has a flair for the melodramatic. When you announce that you're going to be doing a particular genre, that's a bit of a turnoff for me. Hello, Scream franchise.
Yeah.
So there is a flair for the melodramatic. The lighting is melodramatic in its tone, and Woody Allen always has a really good tech crew, but it does have some heavy-handed feelings to it. All right, back. So Justin Timberlake's character, midway through the film, or maybe a little early, reveals that he's having an affair with Kate Winslet's character.
Oh.
And then he meets Kate Winslet's stepdaughter. And that's all I really need to say about that. So some have said this is one of his more autobiographical pieces.
Yeah.
Probably his most autobiographical piece since maybe Husbands and Wives, if you remember that film from the 90s. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, he's gonna go there.
Sometimes you step in it and you do it at the wrong time.
And it does have that kind. This is me. I'm a big Woody Allen fan. When I talk about separating the artist from the art, I know I can do this easier than others. But yeah, this film's got a bit of a flop.
Yeah,
just a bit, and it's there.
Yeah, and that's our theme for this year, right? Is those people, you know, Louis C.K. Louis C.K.
Did you see I Love You, Daddy?
I did.
Did I?
Very creepy.
And this is not your double feature.
This is not the double. Yeah.
That might be the worst double feature of the year.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, uh-huh. I will say Kate Winslet is excellent. You know, and say what you will about you can say what you will about Woody and the way he treats the gender. He does get strong female performances out of, in his films. So anyway, if you love Kate Winslet, I'd say probably the best reason to go see this. But you've been warned.
Yeah,
you've been warned there. Mm-hmm. Okay, shifting gears once again. This is Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Sozi, hanging out with Joe Shearer of the Film Yap. Go to thefilmyap.com. They got plenty of goodies.
Yeah.
We mentioned earlier Sally Hawkins, who's quite good in Blue Jasmine, and has had quite the year between Maudie, and she is in the new film from Guillermo del Toro,
yes.
The Shape of Water, which... I have a soft spot because, full disclosure, hopefully in a very future Film Sociology, I will be reconnecting with Doug Jones, who has been a guest on the show before. He's a Ball State graduate. And he is, along with Andy Serkis, the two big guns when it comes to stop motion or live, non-live motion animation acting.
Right.
She plays a custodian, that's right, cleaning lady in a governmental facility in the early 1960s with Octavia Spencer. Therefore, she will be feisty.
Yes,
and her dad is and Sally Hawkins' character is deaf. She lives with her dad, played by the always cool Richard Jenkins, and she winds up establishing a relationship with a fish reptilian type aquatic looking creature played by Doug Jones.
Yeah.
So imagine a mashup of Beauty and the Beast, Splash, and the Iron Giant.
Yeah.
But directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
So it's going to be R-rated.
Uh-huh.
There's Michael Shannon's buttocks in a weird sex scene, and there's a scene involving a gun and a cheek, and it's really uncomfortable. But if you know Guillermo del Toro's work, Pan's Labyrinth, Crimson Peak, even Pacific Rim, it's got some lovely heart to it. It also has some wonderfully twisted moments, and it's R-rated for a reason. But I think what del Toro wants to do with this film, and I think he succeeds, is He wanted to do something other than a quote unquote horror or like a genre picture because you know Pacific Rim was his homage to monster movies, Pan's Labyrinth was scary but also with a little bit of history to it. Crimson Peak was his masterpiece theater mixed in with a haunted house story.
This is
his kind of love story but also 50s scare tactic type picture.
It's kind of a twisted love story like you said. Very, very well shot. It looks
wonderful. Cool.
Yeah, and it's a very sweet movie. You know, a romance between a fish man and a human woman does not sound like something most people want to see. But there's a great sweetness to it. There's some, you know, you mentioned the performances, you know, terrific. Doug Jones is one of I nominated him for best actor for our group. If he was already there already, he may have
already
been there.
I know, we need to get an update.
But he's one of my favorites right now.
It might be my favorite couple of the year.
Yeah, I
tend to lean toward the love story is where you have to finish your sentences. It just so happens that she's deaf and he's a fish gill thing from the Black Lagoon, but he lives nearby there.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's the dark gray lagoon. Maybe you know it's right down the street.
Yeah,
yeah. They're buddies. Maybe they're second cousins. But it's not particularly scary.
There's just some, but there are
odd moments.
Yeah, it's just bizarre in a really Guillermo del Toro kind of way, and it's a wonderful, wonderful love story. If you plugged in any number of normal human actors into the fishman role, it would be your standard romantic comedy, you know, with a little darkness to
it. But Doug Jones, and just so people can care, Doug Jones, we've seen his career goes all the way back to stuff like Hocus Pocus, mm-hmm. Batman Returns.
Yeah.
We've both interviewed him. You talked about him as the Silver Surfer.
Yeah,
in the first incarnation of the Fantastic Four.
He played years ago. If you remember the McDonald's commercial where
yes,
they had Mac Tonight, he was Mac
that was
Tonight.
One of his first big
yeah.
gigs,
and he's done many things. He's currently on Star Trek Discovery.
That's right,
and he's in the Data role, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
the Spock role, if you want to call it that. And he is terrific in that show. He's done a lot of really good work.
Yeah, he
the
was
past
earlier
years,
this
especially.
Year. He was, I thought, the highlight of the Bye Bye Man, which was a decent horror film. Uh-huh. But it was out earlier this year.
And he was in. He was one of the gentlemen from Buffy the Vampire Slayer years ago, which was one of his more memorable roles.
He's Abe Sapien. Well,
yeah,
the body of Abe Sapien, not the voice.
Right.
Amphibian Man. I'm sorry, that's his character in this. I think I did this the last time. I tend to go to his IMDb and find out what's in post production or completed, and find out if it's actually true.
Yeah.
it's been cool that we've talked before of people like him and Andy Serkis are getting more recognition, mm-hmm. and the fact that hopefully this will lead to him, you know, having a human being role, I guess. It'd be cool. He's that good.
Yeah, he's very good. And you mentioned you've interviewed him. He's from Indianapolis.
Yep.
And I have interviewed him, and he's a very nice guy.
Yeah, he has got a great head on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. He is absolutely just bubbly and fun. And So anyway, I should also mention Michael Stuhlbarg. I always like Michael Stuhlbarg.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the cheek issue. You'll see when it happens.
Yeah. Would it be a spoiler to reveal what his character is?
Yeah, it would kind of.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
But
he's got an interesting tie to the plot, let's just say that.
Yeah, it's funny because you have these really, really good actors. There's an award winner in there with Octavia, a couple of nominees, mm-hmm. and it's like, but I'm probably speculating here, but mm-hmm. they're not allowed to carry a picture by themselves.
Yeah.
I was thinking of this when one of the trailers for, I think, the IMAX films is the new film that Robert Rodriguez is directing, mm-hmm. which has Christoph Waltz, Jennifer Connelly, mm-hmm. and I can't remember who else, but it was one of those. You got a good core, you got a strong bench,
yes,
for us sports terms.
Yes.
So anyway, if you're into different love stories and you don't have issues with nudity, there's some out there,
uh-huh.
and you don't have, especially in the Michael Shannon department.
Yeah.
But and if you don't mind a little blood, a little there's some uncomfortable moments that balance out with the really, really sweet moments. And there's one in particular that I wish I could bring up, and it totally comes out of nowhere. I just did a motion for joke because it's radio and you can't see it.
Yeah.
But no, this is a very sweet film, and hopefully you can go check that out.
Yeah, one of my favorites of the year, absolutely, is in my top 10 right now. So
it might make it in the 20, but I really, really enjoy this. So let's see. Also out there, and just a reminder, there is plenty out there. If you're complaining that there's nothing for you to see, you need help.
Yeah. And while we're talking about The Shape of Water
please.
Topic there, the people who say there are no new ideas in Hollywood,
shut up.
There are no movies about a woman falling in love with a fish man that I remember for years and years and years.
Right.
So give me one of those, and I'll tell you that there are no new ideas.
Or this happened earlier this year when it's almost like I compare it to, well, honey, what do you feel like having for dinner? I don't know. Well, what do you want to eat? I don't care. Well, what about this? No.
Uh-huh.
You're tired of sequels? Right. You're tired of friends? Right. Go see Mother.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to see that.
No, not
well,
that.
Then shut
Something
up.
Something else. Exactly right.
So,
there you go.
So, yeah, Shape of Water's there. Shut up. great recommendation.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone.
Shut up and go see it.
I wish Kobe was here. We could take that soundbite and it'll be part of the lexicon. So, let's see. Also in theaters, you have The Darkest Hour. You have Gary Oldman.
Uh-huh.
And this is the more visible Winston Churchill film.
Yeah.
So,
a terrific tie-in with Dunkirk, by the way. That's if you want to talk about double features.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Or this and the other Churchill film with Brian Cox.
Yes.
So, Have you watched The Disaster Artist? Did you think of me while watching The Disaster Artist?
Oh, I thought of you the whole time. How many times have you watched it? You've watched it like five times.
No, I've watched it once. I watched it once. I liked it. Uh-huh. It's not my top film, smart guy. I just play the hell out of the interview. That's all. I didn't realize how much of a it has an Ed Wood feel to it.
Yes.
Where, yes, just like Ed Wood, he is passionate about his project. He is really invested in it. Mm. His skills are inept.
Right.
And it does open into the bromance between Tommy Wiseau and Greg. Mm-hmm. And that was cool.
Yeah.
And then the cameos were amusing. I think it tickles me that the mother is played by the fine lady who was in Silver Linings Playbook.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God, her name just loses.
Is it Jackie Weaver?
Jackie Weaver, yeah. Jackie Weaver. And Animal Kingdom, the film of Animal Kingdom. And she has definitely has breast cancer.
Uh-huh.
But
right.
But I was talking with a buddy of mine, and I was talking with somebody who doesn't get the room and doesn't care for it and couldn't get past the fact that Wiseau is the scuzzy character. Mm-hmm. It's his words, not mine.
Right.
And I thought, well, if you'd flip this, if Ed Wood was alive today, this was a guy who, was a transvestite and wrote smut, pornographic novels in his off time to, to pay the bills. He was no guy to timeshare a condo with either.
Right, yeah.
Thus, he's separating the artist from the artist.
But it
is amusing, and I know more people are coming out and becoming more aware of this film, of the room, because of The Disaster Artist, and I think that's fine.
I believe it's in my top 10 at the moment,
really?
Too. Yeah, I really did enjoy it.
Are you also a sucker for films about filmmaking? I tend to be.
Yeah, I'll watch some. Especially the documentaries. I'll tend to sit and watch some of those. But, movies where they're making movies. Yeah, that's a fun thing. It's kind of a neat look behind the curtain. I don't know if it's 100% accurate, the Disaster Artist versus, reality, or how much it's trumped up.
Believe it or not, I've not read the book. I will be getting it as a gift, I think, in the month of December. But the only issue I have is I'm going to, again, be vague on this.
Uh-huh.
There is the moment when the film is screened, and I wonder if you remember the audience in Rocky IV, that kind of feeling. Really, this fast?
Uh-huh.
I don't, I get grief from my family because I remember watching Saving Mr. Banks she hated it. I'm sorry, she hated it. So anyway, I need to read up and see if that actually happened. But anyway,
I wonder about that myself. But there are some great moments, and I think. Because I was talking to Nick Rogers, again, one of our friends, who had not seen The Room at the time he saw The Disaster Artist. I don't know if he's watched it since. And he was a little tepid on it. And he asked me, should I have seen The Room first? And I said, well, I feel like having seen it, the best thing about The Disaster Artist is how it kind of demystifies the process a little bit. It demystifies him just a little bit and kind of gives you a glimpse into his thought process and what he was doing, and in a hilarious kind of way. But that enriched the process significantly. And so if you haven't seen The Room, it might be something to look at, just understanding that it's very off the wall. And if you listen to this show, I'm sure you know already, because it is, as we speak, there is a TV playing the room right now.
That's not true. You called me a sadist online. Shut up. I do not keep it on a loop, contrary to popular belief.
I do not, Mark.
Yeah. I hit her. What, are you changing the line? It's I will say this. My daughter, who... I inflicted The Room on my family, and I'm a terrible parent and a terrible husband. Shut up. but my daughter says this, The Room and Manos were the two worst movie experiences she's ever had, and she's willing to give the Disaster Artist a shot.
Oh, yeah.
I think she likes Franco, but and she knows Seth Rogen's in it and a few others, but I think because it's not him, she's willing to give it a shot. So we will see. But and that is out there. And then also, and of course, a couple of these films are at your North Side place where they serve drinks. Yeah. But also up there are probably two films that will probably be in my top five. Lady Bird.
Yes.
Greta Gerwig's really wonderful slice of life with Saoirse Ronan not playing Greta Gerwig.
Right.
Maybe. And as I've mentioned before, the operatic in story but rooted in performances, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yes, yes. I like both of those quite a bit. Lady Bird is my number one at the moment.
Really?
Yeah, I really, really love it. Laurie Metcalf is amazing in that movie.
As she is. Yeah, I think I wrote, that's the scene that has made me cry the hardest. I cried in front of my family. I don't cry in front of these guys. Forget that. But as a parent, it's a real kick to the chest.
Yeah.
So anyway, those are out there. There is plenty. And I think if you're listening to this on Saturday, I believe there's a midnight screening of The Room Saturday night at the Keystone Arts.
Matt Sosie will be there.
I will not be there. I'm in Peter and the Star Catcher at Richmond Civic.
But,
shut up.
But after it's over, he's going to watch it on DVD.
that,
for those of you who don't listen regularly, this is kind of our running joke that he watches it on an endless loop because he loves it so much. And
you know what? We only have we only have 15 minutes left. We have not done the I Can Name Drop Bigger Than You contest that Joe and I also do, which we did earlier this week with your BFF John Carroll Lynch.
Yes.
But Lucky has not come here yet, so we will get to that.
Yeah, see that movie too when you get the chance.
Not really a spoiler on that one. Yeah. Okay, new on DVD and Blu-ray. Did you need another Kingsman film?
I didn't see this one, so I guess not. I really liked the first one a lot.
The first one was fine. Yeah, I thought that even when it was trying to out-kick-ass kick-ass, it's also Matthew Vaughn directing it.
Yeah.
Because when you use a famous piece of music for a ridiculous over-the-top action sequence, in this case, Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd, it still works. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen it, so I just didn't really need another one. And I know there's a bunch of course, like a sequel, you add new characters and they're big names, and I hope they had fun, but I didn't ask for this.
Made some money.
Yeah.
You know,
Home Again, a film that it's Reese Witherspoon now in middle age mode. Well, by Reese Witherspoon standards.
Right.
Yes, I did watch Detroit finally.
Yes.
Catherine Bigelow's telling of the 1967 riots in Detroit, really uncomfortable.
Yes, very, very intense. Yes, and uncomfortable.
John Boyega, who, I know he got big money. He got mad money for Star Wars, and he's probably got paid very little to work with Kathryn Bigelow, and it pays off. It is a hard to watch film involving police and the National Guard and some innocent people caught up in the riots in Detroit in 1967.
Yes, without launching into a huge political diatribe, for certain people who have been getting attention these days for bringing up racial issues, this is what they're talking about.
Right.
You know, this kind of stuff is, and before you say, well, that was years ago, this is what this is their background. So watch this movie and gain a little bit of understanding. Very good movie. Another in my top 10 right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like this movie.
You're really giving away your top 10. I appreciate this.
I mean, it's a living list. So, it's a living variable.
Yeah. And also, ladies and gentlemen, because as I said, we have a meeting this, by the time you listen to this, we've already met.
Right.
But there's the time we meet. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing No Limits next week, so the list might change there. And then I still got until the end of the calendar year. So it might,
things could shift quite a bit.
Things could shift. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that is out there. And then speaking of Reese Witherspoon, the Criterion Collection has put out Election. One of the more fun looks at high school comedy, high school comedy. And one of the early films from Alexander Payne.
Yes.
Great performance by Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick, who got to settle into middle age playing a very popular teacher who's trying to sabotage an election. my daughter enjoys this film, and even with the uncomfortable scenes, yes, the fill me up scenes,
yes,
you know, even this, but it has now become a family tradition that when there is a major election, we watch this film on
election night,
and this was brought up by the 16-year-old. So anyway, if you're into Criterion with all the bells and whistles, that election is there for you. All right, got about 10 minutes left. I want to briefly get to Dead People We Like because we never have time for Dead People We Don't Like.
Never do.
Bruce Brown, documentary filmmaker, did, 12 credits to his name. Best known for the 1966 surfing documentary, The Endless Summer.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it captures California surf life. It's not Frankie and Annette. It's not Gidget. You know, still blonde, handsome guys with surfboards, but really captures that lifestyle and how dangerous it is. It's not, as I said, it's not Frankie. It's not somebody on a screen.
Yes.
It's not Frankie Avalon on a surfboard in a studio with those things. But he did the documentary Slippery When Wet in 1958, not Bon Jovi.
Right.
Surf Crazy from 1959, Surfing Shorts in 1960. You see where this is going.
Right.
Barefoot Adventures, Surfing Holidays, Waterlogged, America's New Sport, Endless Summer, The Incredible Pair of Skis, On Any Sunday, not any given Sunday.
Nope.
The Edge, not Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin.
Not the YouTube
and the
guy.
Giant Bear. Yeah, and the YouTube guy. And the Endless,
or the Wrestler.
And The Endless Summer 2. So, but anyway, very cool visual adventure, natural adventure.
What you're saying is that no one since has captured the surfing lifestyle except the very same Catherine Bigelow we just spoke about, who did so in 1992 with the classic Point Break.
I was thinking of, what was it, Dogtown and Z-Boys.
No, I was talking about the Keanu Reeves movie.
100% adrenaline. Did you see the remake of that?
No.
I don't know anybody who saw that.
You know what I did? I just watched the original again. And I just watched it, actually, the other day. It might be my version of The Room.
It's in a loop?
If it's on, I'm watching it.
You get grief from your family
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'll watch the censored TV version. I'll watch the full-on version. I don't care. I'm going to watch it.
You are an FBI agent.
I am.
Wow. All right. Point Break or Roadhouse?
Point Break. Point Break.
Really?
For me, Point Break.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I love Roadhouse, but Point Break, absolutely, all day long.
That's hilarious. All right. Now we get some movie news. This was a couple days ago, but the National Film Registry, they do this at the end of the year. They pick out films that will be in the archives, so they'll be with us forever. They'll get clean. They'll get restored. And they got 25 films. Here we go. See if we know these and we have opinions on them. We have 8 minutes left.
All right.
Ace in the Hole from 1951. That's the Billy Wilder, Kirk Douglas reporter film. I think everybody should see it. By the way, the post is coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get to it. Boulevard Nights, now in 1979. Number three, and this has been brought up again, apparently for a lot of people, their favorite Christmas film, Die Hard.
Oh, yes.
It's not Die Hard 2, even though I was an extra in Die Hard 2. But first one's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is back when Bruce Willis cared.
Yes.
And when the world, well, not really the world, when the United States was introduced to Alan Rickman.
Yes.
We will forever be grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, these are in alphabetical order, by the way, Dumbo.
Okay.
So.
Surprised that's not in there already.
Right, 1941. Yeah. Number five, Field of Dreams.
Yes.
Good
Absolutely.
One. Good one. Number six, Spike Lee's Four Little Girls.
Okay.
Documentary.
Yeah.
Number seven, I've not seen these. The Fuentes Family Home Movies Collection from the 1920s and 30s. Films are made outside the United States, folks.
Yeah. They're important, too.
They are. Number eight, Gentleman's Agreement, the Gregory Peck anti-Semitism film from 1947.
Mm-hmm.
The Goonies?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I didn't get it then, and I know it's got a following.
You were just a couple of years too late.
Probably too.
Yeah,
that's
just
probably
a couple
I was 15.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. That was 1985. I would have been 8, I think. Yeah.
So you were the target
audience. I was right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Number 10, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? Talk about crying.
Uh-huh.
Spencer Tracy's monologue in that film, because he died, I think, a few weeks right after shooting this.
Yeah.
And
a movie that I saw as an adult. I didn't see Till as an adult.
Okay.
I knew its reputation. I was still blown away at how, for the time it was made and how sophisticated it was and the thoughts on it. It blew me. I expected mm-hmm. it to be your. I expected it to be the Bernie Mac Ashton Kutcher version
They
made 30 years later, and it was so. It was what they. It should have been. It should have been flipped. You know, they should have made that movie in the 60s and made the more sophisticated, quote unquote, intelligent version.
Well,
today.
They kind of. Well, in but, a way, that I think the Jeffersons already did that.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
do that a few years later. Yeah, but yeah,
very, very good movie. Very very good movie.
Number 11 from 1924, He Who Gets Slapped.
okay.
I know. From 1905, Interior New York Subway, 14th Street to 42nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, La Bamba.
Huh. Wow.
We have some people our age apparently at the National Film Registry.
I guess so.
That was the world that introduced the world to Lou Diamond Phillips mm-hmm. and good for Los Lobos.
Sure.
Number 14, Lives of Performers from 1972. Number 15 from 2000, Memento.
Okay.
Hello,
yes.
Christopher
yes.
Nolan, Mr. Dunkirk.
Uh-huh.
1939's Only Angels Have Wings. Number 17, 1918's The Sinking of Lusitania. Number 18, Spartacus.
Okay.
I am Spartacus. I'm Spartacus, and so is my wife. Number 19, the original 1978 Richard Donner's Superman.
Okay.
Hello, Ms. Tessmacher.
Yes.
And hi, Abdul. I know it's one of your favorites.
Yeah.
I still want Otisburg.
He doesn't tell us that every day.
Every time he sees this. Superman logos everywhere.
Often,
he's got a Superman tattoo. We know. We know. Mm-hmm. Number 20, Thelonious Monk's Straight No Chaser, the really cool jazz documentary from mm-hmm. 1988. Number 21, from 1976, Time and Dreams. Number 22, this is the big one. This mm-hmm. is the big one the Hall of Fame ballots, I guess. Titanic.
Oh, okay.
Have your kids watched? Have your kids in it?
No. Now I have a little cousin
uh-huh.
who for a time was absolutely obsessed with the Titanic, and it was his favorite. I mean,
with the Titanic?
With the
You're
Titanic,
old!
And he watched, and that was his favorite movie. And this was... I mean, he's my older son's age. This was probably 7 or 8 years ago. So he would have been probably 5 or 6 at the time.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, he like big the Lego model of – he was doing all that kind of stuff.
So with the Legos, he found out Jack could have been there.
Right. He definitely – and Kate Winslet actually, if
on,
you saw –
On Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
That was funny as hell.
Yes,
so,
yes. So she – it was all DiCaprio's fault, guys. So don't put it on her. That's what she's
and
saying.
And it's funny. My daughter, she loves DiCaprio, and we just haven't gotten around to it. I think she's – we'll get to it someday. So – So Titanic is probably the Jack Morris of this year's Red
you
or Alan
Trammell.
You had
Trammell. To throw that in, didn't you?
I'm sorry, Sweet Lou should be in there, and y'all know it.
Yeah,
so,
yes,
Number 23, the Charles Burnett film To Sleep with Anger Danny Glover.
Good movie. Yeah.
Number 24, 1971's Wanda. And finally, from 1937 and 1938, with the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in Spain. So there are 25 films that will live forever, and we are all better for it.
When the aliens invade us and kill us all, these will be the films they watch. This is our legacy.
See, in my house, it's when the animals attack.
Okay, yeah.
When the animals, and they evolve, and they're able to use their hoofs to push the VCR, the DVD, or the Blu-ray player,
yes.
or whatever comes next, streaming, I guess.
Because they're not going to learn the internet.
They're not going to learn the internet. And apparently, and now there will be internet for nobody because of
right.
this week.
Right.
Anyway, we have a wooded backyard in our house, and we don't really do composting. We just throw food into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So when the animal kingdom takes over, we'll be okay.
Right, because they're
going
to like
spared.
You.
Yeah, they like us.
Or else they'll all be there and they'll get you first.
And then I will play the music. You know, I will DJ and I will show them movies human multiplex.
So you'll be the slave to the apes.
It's all right. So anyway, when the aliens and the animals take over, there's 25 more films they can watch when they sit on our carcasses.
I mean they'll have some good entertainment for a while. You know.
So, all right, what's happening? All right, we got about a minute or so left. What's happening over at the Film Yacht besides the usual?
I was going to say, I'm going to say a little of this and a little of that. we're actually going through kind of a new era, if you want to call it that. We've had a couple of our friends kind of move on, and they've both been on here, Sam and Evan, Sam Motormeyer and Evan Dawson.
They've gone solo.
Yeah, they've taken
their own site.
Absolutely, and you know, we're very supportive of that. It's you know, as our ongoing role of
you're not
expanding
sending,
film criticism. In
you're
the
not
state.
Sending viruses to their own site.
Right? No, not at all. So we're readjusting and reloading, so to speak. We've got a couple of new writers that have come on, and they're doing a great job. We're expanding. I'm kind of getting back into it myself. As I think I've mentioned on the show in the past, I've been involved in kids sports for quite a while, so I'm kind of getting back in now.
Right.
I've kind of enjoyed my time with my younger son, and I'm going to continue doing that, honestly. But
you're going to put him on waivers,
right? So yeah, we're in the midst of basketball season, so
all right.
Of course, read my Star Wars review, check out all of our stuff. Chris Lloyd has his weekly indie style TV clips and that kind of stuff, so come in and check it out.
There
free movies still.
Yep. And then next week we'll reveal the IFJA winners, and we will not go online to see what the trolls say about our profile.
Yes.
Photos. All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by. Soylent Green is people. Uh-huh. Zardoz has spoken. There's plenty of good movies. You have no excuse.
Right.
Go see something. Thanks, Joe.
You deserve it.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!